Happy Friday, everybody. Glad you're with us. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN2. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. All phone guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo here with you. Or as Junior called it, today is Tay Day.
Tay Day, happy Tay Day, happy Thigh Day. It's
thigh
a lot
day
going
and
on.
Tay Day, well, you got a big day.
It's
big
a lot day. To take in right now on yeah. a lot of fronts.
Wow, it really is. And, oh my God, baseball started.
How about that?
Wow.
It is amazing what a difference live sports being back in that way. And I don't say that to discredit the National Women's Soccer League,
right.
You know, the MLS's back
NASCAR,
tournament, what we've seen in NASCAR, but one of the four majors in the U.S. Like, right. there's a different thing and a different level, I think, that comes along with knowing we have one of those back.
No, you're 100% right. And we've enjoyed watching the NASCAR, and the PGA Tour has been back as well, and MMA and UFC has been going strong. But there are the big four for a reason.
They're
called that because they draw the most eyeballs, and baseball is the first of the big four to be out there and back. And we saw the doubleheader begin yesterday with the Yankees and Nationals, and then the Dodgers winning their game against the Giants later on. And it just it felt like, oh, I know you. I actually turned on my TV. I'm like, there's a live big-time sporting event, which, again, just one of the big four on my screen. And that part was comforting and interesting. And then the fact that there was no one there was completely surreal.
Well, and also because we weren't sure if we were getting it back. Remember, right. at one point, Buster only said 5% chance to start, 0% of finishes.
He still may be right on the zero.
I was going to say, we still had the finishing part for this, and we'll get to that because, a big-time player for a big-time team tested positive for the virus, which is something added to this whole thing outside of injury that you can talk about Clayton Kershaw. But, we weren't sure if this was going to go. And then we got it. We said, we're looking forward to Gerrit Cole and Max Scherzer. And we got two great pitching performances, right? Scherzer with 11 strikeouts. Cole gave up one hit, which is a home run in the first inning. He looks the part right now. Scherzer did give up, I believe, 6 hits in this one and 4 runs, but did have those 11 strikeouts. We had the big boppers hitting for the Yankees. So we kind of got what we thought. The biggest uh-oh was Clayton Kershaw being pulled from his start in the second game of the doubleheader, the Dodgers 8-1 to win over the Giants because of the back that he kind of tweaked on Tuesday. But it's something we've dealt with before with him. So baseball has started, but we are dealing also in baseball with how long until that big name or that one person who could really have an effect on a team has to miss X amount of time because of the virus.
It all happened in one day. Like, this is when you just throw all your groceries down after the one trip you make from the car on the counter and have to kind of sort through all of it because there's some good and some bad mixed in there. Yes, it felt great to have all that back, but we said the concern would be, would that cause people to exhale and think, all right, we've made it, we've earned this, look at what we've done and get all this, or would it make them redouble their efforts because baseball's going to have to look into that. Juan Soto finding out that he tested positive and being held out on the opening day of Major League Baseball is simultaneously all the best things that we wanted about Major League Baseball coming back and all of the worst things of, all right, someone dealing with an injury because of a shortened lead up to the season and a positive test for the virus we're all trying to avoid.
Right. And so what does this mean going forward? Our own Jeff Passan tried to put it in the proper context here about how Soto, who had tested negative, suddenly tests positive, and what has to happen for him to come back and why that is so significant.
When you test positive for coronavirus, you need 2 negative tests to come back. And what I've heard from a number of players in recent days who have teammates or who have been dealing with coronavirus themselves is that the gestation period for getting negative tests has grown longer and longer. And I'm not trying to assume too much based on, a small sample of a few guys. But what it means is that you can test positive and test positive and test positive and test positive. You're asymptomatic. And we're talking about a month missed at that point. And when we're talking about a 2-month-long season, missing a month, missing even 2 weeks is a long time. So Juan Soto is really just hoping that he gets a couple of negative tests back as soon as possible.
And also the issue with it is just not Juan Soto because you have the contact tracing. Did he infect anybody else? And the determination was made that he hadn't by contact tracing, which I'm sure a lot of people are going to scratch their head and say, well, wait a minute. Isn't he at the facility with the rest of the team? Didn't they just have their last, warm-up game against the Orioles? So, wait a minute, how can you say contact tracing doesn't have them around the others? But that's what was determined, and those players will be tested, though it is testing every other day. So you wait till you get the results of it, And that's going to be the issue. It's already a big issue when a player gets it, but then is anybody else going to be infected by him? And you won't know till the next round of testing. And then obviously, as you just heard Jeff Passan say, you have to wait for those two negative tests before that one player can even get back.
And I thought in all of this, and this is just the way I'm wired, we're obviously a show that skews this way, but I thought of football, because once we found out after that first 2 weeks, if you're above or below that 5% positivity rate threshold, NFL teams want to test every other day.
Right.
NFL teams are also going to be operating outside of a bubble and dealing with a lot of these things. And just what you said, it's a reminder that baseball is in a different position entirely, because the nature of the sport is more socially distanced. But when it comes to, you know, not infecting the other athletes, there's that part. But all the other social distancing measures, when people said, well, if you're going to have people in the football field go out there hitting each other, why would we be doing the rest of this stuff inside the building? It's what you just said. You've got a whole staff of people there, right, that those protocols are still designed to protect. So if you have something like this, and based off this is the first rattle out of the box, you will, believe me, NFL, you will deal with something like this. You've got to make sure that everything else is buttoned up in a way to protect that more vulnerable section of your workforce, the people that are around those staffs, the people that are over a certain age in this.
And why that's an interesting apples-to-apples comparison on one end is because baseball, like football, will not be bubbling like we're seeing, right, in the NBA, the WNBA, and the MLS. You could literally play an entire baseball game and not touch another human being, which is not possible for one single snap in the National Football League.
It was the amazing part watching last night, is you realize, man, and you saw this, you know, the spacing in the dugouts that they created, how they were using all the space in the park. You could really go most of the game without coming into contact with damn near anyone.
And another difference of the bubble and outside the bubble of the expectations, right? Yeah. When you're in the bubble, your expectations are to have all negatives, just like the NBA had. We're in a bubble. We're containing everybody. I know there's some outside workers that come in, but for the most part, we're containing everybody. So we expect there to be all negatives, just like there was in the NBA. You can't have that same expectation in college football, in the NFL, and in baseball, because they're going into their communities. So I think the different goal here is, we know we're going to get a positive test or two or more. It's what we do with those. Are we so good, as we all are saying, are you so good off the field, distancing in the clubhouse, distancing around, that you're not going to spread it to somebody else? So I think there's two different expectations, that it doesn't happen in the bubble and you stay negative, and outside of it, you're going to get the positives like Juan Soto, but with contact tracing and the way you're doing your safety protocols, they're not infecting anybody else.
One thing that I thought Matt Vasgersian did a great job bringing up right away with the ceremonial first pitch of the game, not the one that thrown by Dr. Fauci, was that they threw those baseballs away. And by the way, in a 60-game schedule, because of the protocols, you could actually go through more Major League Baseballs during this 60-game season than you would in an actual regular season. And I forgot to watch for this last night, so I feel bad. Did anybody spit? Was there a lot of spitting? I forgot to watch for the spitting.
I didn't notice much. I was looking for some. I was looking to see, a lot of guys had gum in their mouths. I thought it was chewing tobacco, and so I was like, all right, here we go. Yeah. Turned out it was a lot of gum. I did not see a lot of spitting, though, from what I can remember.
I mean, the idea that we didn't notice it is honestly amazing if you think about
that.
That
is true.
People spit on almost every play in baseball.
And I'm very happy we talked about opening day, all the things that went with it, and we didn't mention Dr. Fauci throwing that. Very,
I don't know what you're talking about. Bad. Probably time to go to break. Probably time to get away from that.
He was focusing on more important matters, and for that, he has my underlying.
Certainly wasn't focusing on the catcher's glove.
Respect. He's trying to catch something else.
Leave Fauci alone.
He's trying to catch something else, so we'll just leave that alone. Coming up next, what can the NFL take from the positive test for coronavirus in Major League Baseball, and what will it take to get the name right for one certain team? We'll get to all of that after this.
Just come up with a freaking name. Call it Steve.
Sentinels is coming. Just do it. I mentioned 2.5 weeks ago. Just do it.
I love that Mina just advocated for the team being the Washington Steves.
Just call it Steve. Just call it Steve.
Probably best for them to just put a placeholder in, get through whatever this season is going to be, and then roll out the new name next year.
This sounds like somebody owns the trademark to the name that they want, and this is something that's going to be battled out in court.
Oh, yeah. It'll be battled. Don't be. There will be battling. That's the one thing we can say about the Washington football team.
If that's it. I mean, yeah. we have no idea if that's it, of why they didn't choose a name. Maybe it could be that Daniel Snyder didn't think he was going to have to change the name up to just a few weeks ago.
Is clearly the case.
Because he certainly didn't want to. Yeah. There's no doubt about that.
Me, I might be honest with him. Steve sounds all right.
The Washington Steve? Steves.
Relative to what they have been, I feel like I could go with the Steves.
Well, relative to what they have been, you could say anything.
Yeah, exactly. Like yeah. Steve.
Be honest about that. So much more on this as we're presented by Progressive Insurance, and all phone guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line, including our next guest, who was in the front office for the Washington football team for a few years after his playing career is over. Louis Riddick is here with us. Louis, HTTFT, hail to the football team. It doesn't quite have the same ring, does it?
No, it doesn't. And it's people are going to have some fun with it, obviously. They already have. It's kind of been par for the course for this franchise of late, though, to be kind of be on the wrong side of being mocked and ridiculed and criticized for many of the things that it has done recently, and deservedly so. This is just another thing that kind of falls right in line with it, although I guess none of us should really be shocked over the fact that, and I heard you guys referencing this as we were coming on, that they haven't decided on anything. We shouldn't be shocked by that. We shouldn't be shocked because they are shocked, I'm sure. I'm sure Dan is shocked at the speed with which everything has kind of come down on him. Although all of us on the outside looking in are sitting there going, really, were you that clueless? Did you have that amount of a lack of awareness? Look, it is what it is. Now this team can be called nothing besides the team. You know, their uniforms, quite honestly, you know, the way it looks like they're going to look this year, they look like they're going to be Alabama North. Which isn't shocking either, if you think about all the Alabama.
I was about to say that defense has got to be
team.
Half Alabama players
exactly.
Anyway.
And look, he has an affinity for those players from that program, and deservedly so. They come from a great program down there in Tuscaloosa. But look, man, it's just one thing after another with this team. And although there's a lot of people who are diehard Washington fans who now say, "Well, get off of our back. We're doing what we're supposed to do." So what do you mean, get off of your back? I mean. This is coming down on this football team, easy comparatively when you think about all the different things that they have just been accused of and ridiculed with as of late. It's just one more thing to add on top of it.
Yeah, this one is a comparative drop in the bucket compared to the real issues that organization is dealing with, Louis. And so the timeline for that seems like it is going to be extended right now. I'm curious, though, the NFL and the Players Association right now working on some issues that need answers quicker. The last, three things that the two sides continue to negotiate: rules for the training camp, acclimatization period, procedures for the opt-outs, and how to handle the league's long-term finances. I'm curious, what do you think the timeline looks like for these decisions now?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, like I've always, from talking to the people who are, on the ground and really trying to, get these teams prepared and ready to go, in the event that everything does move on schedule, they have all indicated to me that, what would be the problem with slowing things down, pushing the season back, delaying the season a little bit, by a few weeks, so there's more time to work out all these things. Because right now, when you're talking about what's the timeline, I mean they're up against it. I mean, every minute, every second is something that has to be utilized to its fullest if they want to start everything on time and have the season start on time. So I really don't know, without being privy to those negotiations between the NFLPA and ownership, I mean, who knows what their timeline is? I just know that they're up against it. I know that the people who are on the ground, who are really making the decisions that really affect what is the most important, which is the players' health and the players' families and the staff's families and the staff themselves, those guys are working 24/7 around the clock. I mean, their timeline is 5 minutes ago as far as what they need to get done. And it is a monumental. Let me just tell you, we're talking now about player opt-outs, and we're playing about how the league is going to handle the financial, repercussions in terms of how much do the owners take on, how much do the players take on. I mean, and I get it. Look, football is a business and all, but look, the most important thing is really the thing that the trainers and doctors and medical staffs are going through right now. And let me just tell you this. These guys are trying to prepare for things that they can't even foresee happening, because they're dealing with something that they can't see. They don't know where it is. They don't even know how to really combat it, with 100% effectiveness. Obviously, no one does in this world right now knows how to combat this with 100% effectiveness. And those are the people who right now really deserve a ton of credit because they are going to shoulder all of the blame if things go wrong and people get sick and something happens to individual players and or coaches and their families. And I'm telling you, they have a job unlike anyone in the National Football League has ever had right now in a climate that none of us have ever faced. And I don't envy them. I really salute them. I applaud them for the task they're taking on. But that's really where the focus should be, is these medical and training staffs and the kind of work they're trying to put in right now to make sure that these guys stay safe and these coaches stay safe so we can have something to talk about in the next couple of months in terms of live sports, football in particular. It's a big deal. It's a challenge that's nothing like basketball, baseball. I mean, it's so different, man. And these guys are earning their money. Let's put it that way.
Louis Riddick joining us here on Golic and Wingo. So Mike just mentioned there's still like three things that are out there being negotiated. That being said, veterans are supposed to report July 28th. Put your player helmet back on and don't be in management anymore. If you're a player, you showing up? If these are unresolved, are you showing up on July 28th?
Yeah, given how my career unfolded, you know, and if I put myself back into that time, Mike, yeah, I would show up. I mean, obviously, I would have some questions, and obviously, there would be some serious concern as to, you know, what are the financial ramifications going to be to me? What are the safety protocols as it pertains to me, and then how obviously is going to affect my family? But I think most guys who I know have said the same thing. You know, I would show up. I would have a lot of questions, but that's just kind of how I was wired during my playing days, which was I would have done whatever it took to play the game. And looking back on it now, I wouldn't have changed anything I did when I did play. And looking forward and trying to project into what these guys are dealing with right now, I think I'd make the same decision a lot of these players are going to make, which is, this is what we do, man. It's what we do. So just, you would put faith in the people who are really negotiating for my safety and for my, financial security to do their job too, because I'm willing to do mine. And it's just, it's such an unfortunate situation. Guys are put in such tough situations. You should never have to sit here and compromise and make a decision that will compromise your health and or your financial status, because look, you've earned it. You've worked for it. This is something that is yours, so to speak. It's something that's personal to you, that being the financial status that you have been able to attain and your health and preserving your health. If you shouldn't be put in these kind of situations that have to compromise either one of those, because of a situation like this, but that's the times that we're living in. But yeah, I'd be there. I can't imagine what some of these guys are going through and the decisions they're having to make and the conversations they're having to have with their families, though. It's got to be tough.
It is. And one thing I do think we need to get out there, a lot of people have sort of said sort of cavalierly, well, the NFL clearly has no plan for this. I think the NFL was hoping that – I think the NFL knows the reality of their game, which is you can't have a single snap and have any social distancing. Like we were just talking about this, Lewis, earlier. Literally, that baseball game last night, you could have played it and no one could have touched each other. I think the NFL was hoping that the long runway would figure something out, and then the spike and the lack of people doing the things that are necessary to control the damn thing are really more problematic than anything the NFL could have tried to implement in the first place.
Exactly. They were looking at it, above them in terms of, well, we're going to have this kind of, really clamped. We're going to really have this clamped down and have a little better hold on it so then we can do what we need to do. And although there's never going to be a situation where you eliminate 100% of the risk, it'll be a much more, a much more tolerable level of risk than what it is right now. There's no question that they thought things would be much further, much further along as far as testing and contact tracing and flattening the curve and et cetera, et cetera. But you're right. I mean, you see it every day on social media. You hear just walking around, wherever it is that you live and where you are. There's so many people that are so resistant and so stubborn and so pig-headed about this entire thing as if it's, like it's something that's just so personal to them, like this virus is infringing upon their their life and their lifestyle and their freedoms and what they want to do. It's mind-boggling, the attitude that some have taken towards this. And it's having a trickle-down effect. It's having an effect on the sports that we want to see. People want to see those sports, but they didn't want to do the things leading up to the time that now these sports are being played to make sure that it's safe for everyone. And you're right. I was watching some ESPN Classic type games here on our different ESPN networks here, you know, different bowl games, college games and stuff. And I'm sitting there watching those recently, and I'm going, this is a game I played my entire life that, you know, many of us have played our entire lives. And I'm sitting there watching it, and for the first time, I'm going, every single play, there's just a mass of humanity. Every play, we're banging against each other. I'm going, when you're talking, I mean, look, you're right. Basketball, I watched the baseball game last night, soccer and all this. I'm not going to say where, you know, it's easy to social distance, but obviously there's much less contact, Trey. You're right. And I'm sitting here in football. It's impossible. I mean, every play, every single guy is next to somebody, right next to somebody. So the thing that they're trying to accomplish right now by getting the season started on time, the same thing with college football. I mean, look, man, I mean, John Harbaugh said it the best, I believe, a couple weeks ago. He said, you know, some of the things that we are being asked to do are basically they're impossible. It's impossible to play this game the way that you know, maybe, you know, the health officials want you to play it in terms of player safety. It's just impossible to do, but they're trying to do it anyway. And man, again, I mean, it's something that just doesn't have a, you know, foolproof 100% guarantees with it right now in terms of answers and protocols. There's just no way. There's just no way that you can just tell though, listening to the players, they just want there to be something in place that they feel as though everyone is looking out for their well-being first and foremost. And they're obviously not feeling that way in mass totally yet. And that, again, that's unfortunate. When you go back to ask me that question, what would you do? Even with all that being said, I would still say, okay, I'm going to strap it up and play. Just please do your job to help keep me safe in a situation where I know you can't keep me 100% safe. I mean, how crappy is that? To have that feeling going out there on the football field. But I would go anyway.
Yeah. It is the position I think a lot of us that strapped it up at some point all have kind of come back to in a lot of this one. We're talking to Lewis Riddick, our ESPN NFL front office insider on this one. But Lewis, such a valuable perspective on all things around the world, the sports, and certainly around life. So wanted to get your reaction to something. I heard some pretty profound words from LeBron James yesterday after their practice, after their exhibition game. Wanted to play that for you and get some of your reaction. Here's what he had to say.
I love the game. I love the NBA. I love what we've built. Not only here in America, but all over the world. I think this is the most precious, beautiful, impactful game in the world. But a lot of people kind of use this analogy talking about Black Lives Matter as a movement. It's not a movement. When you're black, it's not a movement. It's a lifestyle. We sit here and say it's a movement, and okay, how long is this movement going to last? Don't stop the movement. No, this is a walk of life. When you wake up and you black, that is what it is. It shouldn't be a movement. It should be a lifestyle. This is who we are, and we understand that, and we know that for one step that someone else might have to take, or for 1 yard someone else may have to take, that we know we got to take 5 more steps, and we know we got to take 10 more yards to get to the end zone. I mean, we understand that, we know that. So, but also what makes us, a strong, powerful, it makes us so unique and unified is that we'd have so much hardships in our life, either from personal experiences or loved ones or reading history or seeing videos, Rodney King, just being a part of just the communities that you in where you just racially profiled from the time you come out of the womb. So it's not a movement. I don't like the word movement. Unfortunately, in America and society, there ain't been no damn movement for us. There ain't been no movement. We land in this with justice for Breonna Taylor. We're going to continue to harp on that.
Lewis, obviously a lot to take in there, but some pretty poignant remarks from LeBron James that I'm sure resonate with a lot of people.
Sure. Look, Mike, I heard those last night. I was sitting up, you know, watching. I watched their game last night against Dallas on NBA TV. And, you know, and I heard his comments, you know, post scrimmage. And look, I get what LeBron is saying. What he's saying is, look, this may seem like a moment in time for some that starts, you know, that started with the murder of George Floyd, but this has been something that has been going on for hundreds of years for African Americans. And it is a way of life. It is something that African Americans have dealt with since it seems like forever, since the onset of slavery and, you know, through the 1900s, through, you know, through Jim Crow laws, through the civil rights movements of the 60s to now. I mean, this is something that this always been kind of one of the, a way of life for us that is much, much bigger than, this specific moment of time that now, obviously is characterized by a lot of attention worldwide, and in particular, here in the United States, but again, worldwide, it's much bigger than that. And it's like, I think what LeBron is saying is like, well, where have you been? What do you think's been happening? You think this just started with the murder of George Floyd? Do you think racial injustice and systemic racism just started with the murder of George Floyd? This has been happening for years and years and years, and people have been saying this has been happening for years and years and years. And, it kind of gets a little bit of attention and then gets swept under a rug and then just becomes systemic again and just becomes a part of what you have to deal with day after day after day. And it becomes so indoctrinated and so normalized that it's almost like there's no racism because it's just become a normal way of doing things. It's just a normal way that people act towards people of different races. And it's just like racism just becomes a part of society. And that's just a fact. So that's why he's saying, he doesn't like the term movement. It may be a movement for some. It may be this awakening or this enlightenment for some, but if you're black and you live in America, this isn't a movement. This isn't an awakening. This isn't an enlightenment for us. And when he says, he's known for years that for every step, one step that someone has to take, if you're black, you have to take two or three steps in order to get to the same place. I talked about this a couple weeks ago about the fact that, as a young kid, I knew all along. It was told to me, and I kind of figured out pretty quickly that as someone who was black living in a predominantly obviously white society, that I had to be twice as good in order to achieve the same as someone who was a different skin color than me. That's just something that you're born knowing, or not born knowing. That's something that you're taught at an early age and that you figure out at an early age. And that's the kind of thing, that's what he's talking about, that this didn't just start happening over the past couple of months and this summer, and where now obviously all the focus and attention is on it because we're in a pandemic and people are sitting around at home and don't have anything to do besides focus on world matters. This is something that's been happening for a long, 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 long time. And he's kind of saying, it's kind of ticking me off the fact that we're making this seem like, oh my God, this all just started recently. No, it's been started for a long time. But in mass, there wasn't this kind of movement to actually kind of do something about it. Now, all of a sudden, people care about it in mass and want to do something about it. Now, the repercussions for you, if you don't want to do something about it, are much greater than they've ever been in the past. And people don't want to be caught on the wrong side of history, so to speak. And maybe that's because genuinely they feel as though, this isn't right and racial injustices aren't right and they want to do something about it, or because they don't want to be publicly shamed or ridiculed or made to feel like, hey, you're someone who's are you for racism? Are you not against racism? So now people are trying to make judgments about that, and that's those are the things that really, I mean, we could talk about this, and we have been talking about this a lot recently, but these are kind of things that those are kind of feelings that LeBron is referring to, and obviously all of us as minorities and African Americans have, and it's a lot to kind of hold in. It's a lot to have had to deal with for such a long time, like we've had to deal with it. And it is good that now, obviously, these, as people call them, uncomfortable conversations, which I'm kind of, I'm kind of tired of, necessarily using that terminology too, because it's uncomfortable, but why is it uncomfortable? It's uncomfortable because it's maybe something that some people consciously or subconsciously, I can't really speak for them, had pushed to the wayside and ignored and not acknowledged and kind of minimized and trivialized because they weren't the ones who were feeling it. Well, yeah, it's not uncomfortable for me to talk about it because it's something that's been normalized for me since I was, as LeBron says, since I came out of the womb, since I was a young child. These are the kind of things that I knew growing up black in America that I had to deal with. Yeah. They quickly seep into your conscious and your train of thought and what you have to do in order to make it through a day and the next day and the next day and the next day. And what is, quote unquote, white America. I mean, you understand that. And these are the kind of things that those are the kind of things that I'm, not speaking for LeBron, that it sounds like he's trying to get out there, is that this movement thing's starting to bother me because, it's not a movement for me. It's not a movement for my mom and my mom's mom and generations before me. It was just a way of life. And now people are going, well, damn. Wasn't quite so fair for you, was it? No, it isn't.
I think that's the awakening we're all trying to deal with. No question
about
that, it.
I mean, that's what he's talking about. And I don't mean to ramble on there, Trey. But
No, man. No, it's
obviously it's an important issue. I mean, it's a big time issue, and obviously LeBron James is someone who has a big time profile, big time profile, and that's really what he's trying to get out there. And onward we go.
We understand, Lewis. On so many levels, we appreciate you, and thanks for your time and wisdom this morning.
Of course.
Thank you.
Thanks, Lewis.
You got it, guys. All right, I'll see you.
Be good. All right, lots more to get to, but first let's get caught you up with this SportsCenter update. Golic and Wingo here with you as we're continuing our conversations about what's going on in this country and what's going on with the return of Major League Baseball. For all of that, we're delighted to be joined by Doug Glanville. Doug, thanks for being with us this morning. We just heard from an impassioned Lewis Reddick about LeBron James' statements on it's not a movement, it's every day or a moment or a movement, it's just every day for him. I want to get your reaction to that and also what you saw from Major League Baseball, especially in the opening game between the Yankees and the Nats, everyone holding that tapestry together, and Andrew McCutchen, of all people, writing a speech that was voiced in the intro by Morgan Freeman.
No question. I mean, you know, I heard Lewis, and I understand what LeBron is trying to express. I mean, because the fear of temporary justice. You know, there's always this lurking concern, and this is based on history. You know, the nature of when something is systemic is that it's like water. You know, you plug a hole over here, and you're like, oh, let's fix the law enforcement, let's fix this relationship, and then it slides over into housing, and then it moves over to education, and it's so adept at morphing and shifting into something even more pernicious than when it started, because it's so woven into the response system of our country. And so I think there's an expression of frustration and insecurity about labeling it something that even implies that it's temporary, because it is experiential. Now, the shift, though, that has to come from it does resemble the movement, right? There's a necessity if you're actually now trying to make full-scale change that will sustain, that you have to start engaging into the processes sort of that allows that change to happen. So whether it's legislative or policy or voting or whatever it may be, and these are things LeBron James has worked on, you know, that's where sort of the movement component comes into, because it takes that. It takes that constant pressure. It takes diverse people all working towards something to say, how does this actually change our society into policy, into law, but also into the social norms, where we're unlearning and relearning and reconsidering race in America. So I fully understand, and I think you look at, you mentioned Major League Baseball, you know, this statement with Andrew McCutchen's his poetry, and also the ribbon tying people together, and it's difficult because you have teams of diverse people all trying to sort out what they want to do, kneel, stand, and I think they were trying last night to create a sort of through line through all these players, saying, you know, we are united on this mission to be one team, and we have different ways to express that and different experiences, but it's important we support each other. And I think it's starting to resonate that it's more than just between the white lines or while we're wearing the uniform or when we're in the safe space of the clubhouse. They're recognizing the black experience outside of those white lines. You take the uniform off, or sometimes in Torrey Hunter or Adam Jones's cases, it's when you're wearing the uniform. And they're trying to bring solidarity throughout that connection that team is throughout professional sports and sports in general. And so that was important. It's important, the acknowledgement, to just say, wait a minute, you know, this is happening. It's like the Red Sox statement, racism is real. Real, this is happening. That's actually a big step, because part of that experience is defending yourself, relitigating your experience, and often people dismissing it, saying, "Well, racism wouldn't exist if you just stopped bringing it up, or that didn't really happen, or it didn't mean that." I think that's part of what gets frustrating, you know, sort of restating it. And so when you're finally getting larger organizations, leagues, and teams, teammates who don't necessarily look like you, coming out and saying, no, this is real, and we're listening, and we understand, that is extremely powerful.
It certainly is, and we wanted to get your thoughts on that. Listen, because of the clock, we got to take a break now, but when we come back, we want to get to you on the baseball side of things. If you can just hang with us through the break, okay?
Absolutely.
Perfect. We'll get much more on Doug Glanville on baseball's opening day, what it means and what it doesn't mean, maybe, after this.
All right, not all motor oils are created the same. Motor oil made from crude oil contains impurities, but Pennzoil synthetic motor oils are made from natural gas. Its base oil is 99.5% free from impurities. It gives you unbeatable engine protection, so the next time you get an oil change, ask for Pennzoil. The proof is in the Pennzoil, based on Sequence 4A wear test using SAE 5W30. Back after this, Golic and Wingo.
GEICO is now offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies. Visit geico.com for more.
This show and all of ESPN is streaming live on the ESPN app.
Now with ESPN Plus, where you get more ESPN.
Download the ESPN app today.
And take ESPN everywhere.
The Nationals dugout, you have people in there trying to drain it right now because water was mid-shin.
No fans in the stands, no food. It is weird.
Outside corner, got him looking. Got him looking.
Golic and Wingo here with you. Glad you're with us. We are working our way through a Friday morning and talking baseball with Doug Glanville, who is still with us. Thanks for hanging with us through the break, Doug. So I guess in many ways the opening night of the baseball season was exactly what a lot of people expect. A, the Yankees won. B, the Dodgers won, so they'll meet in the World Series. And, of course, the Yankees game was shortened by a fantastic storm, which also could be a very bad omen for the Major League Baseball season if you think about it.
I'll tell you, it took a lot to get here, you know, and so there's, on top of just the excitement of baseball starting, there's, you know, just the journey that was so unprecedented to just finally see baseball played. And, it's exciting. I'm still a huge fan, you know, growing up covering the game, playing it, but, it's just good to see the game get back out there and you know, some good baseball. You don't know how sharp people will be given how many starts and stops these players have had.
We wanted to see how sharp Clayton Kershaw was, but again, the back stops him from starting the season, a 60-game season. So how concerning to you is that?
Well, it's concerning in the big picture for Clayton Kershaw. He just has had a lot of injuries, especially as he's gotten older. And he's always had a very violent pitching motion. His delivery, you know, very herky-jerky, and it's been taxing. The Dodgers, however, are extremely deep. And in some ways, in this short season, if you get a Clayton Kershaw back, you know, right at the trade deadline, I know it's short season, but he can still be something, or, you know, a sort of a person, a talent that can inject new life into that team if he comes in as sort of that player to be named later as he gets healthy. So I still think the Dodgers are in a great position to go very far this season.
Doug Glanville with us here on Golic and Wingo. One of the other big notes going into last night was obviously the absence of Juan Soto, the positive COVID test for him. How concerning should that be for Major League Baseball that on your opening night one of your stars is sitting out because of the virus?
Highly concerning, and just like with any player, really, they've known all along that these are the strong possibilities. To some degree, they're celebrating that they made it fairly safely through this spring training, second spring training. That was not a guarantee. And so they're prepared with the depth of having the taxi squads and having extra players to kind of weave in. But, this virus doesn't care if you're, you know, a destined Hall of Famer or, you know, MVP. It does not matter. And it makes teams be very prepared for all kinds of scenarios. And depth will matter a lot, and also just sort of good fortune that it doesn't, you know, take out multiple players. So that's what makes the season exciting in some ways, because anybody could win this, anybody. And that's sort of endorsed even more by the expanded playoff format. But you just do not know how everything is going to come down. And so teams that can adjust quickly and have the continuity, they're going to be able to be successful.
Yeah, and just real quickly, because we're up against the clock here again, Doug, and we apologize. What was your takeaway from the first game without fans? I mean, how weird was it? What was the one thing you noticed, besides obviously the live mic catching Max Scherzer after the Stanton home run?
Yeah, it's strange. The crowd noise, the pumping, I get it. It's doesn't it doesn't match what I associate what I hear as a player. You know, it's like, all right, you play it here, and it's a little bit off or a little late. So I know they're trying to give that sort of life to it, and that's strange. Even though I played in front of like three people in high school and college or something, but as a pro and have been playing a long time, you're used to 30,000 fans, and they're so important. So the players will adjust, as they will with a lot of other protocols, and that's just one more thing to push baseball to innovate and find other ways to engage fans when they're not there.
Yeah, I think it'll be a fascinating listen all season long as much as anything else. Doug, as always, We appreciate your time and your many perspectives. Thank you, my friend.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Doug. Yeah. And again, for those, it just came out, the postseason went to 16 games. Again, You'll have division winners, second place winners, and the seventh and eighth slot will be the next two best records. So there'll be four first-round series, all best of three, with the better record getting all the home games in that one. Yeah. But best of three, you may get some of those upsets, that's for sure.
Yep, exactly. Going to be a much more wild, volatile look in what is kind of the theme for the season. Every part of it, we expected some critical junctures to be pretty volatile, and we got the whole time capsule of that all on night one.
All right, here's the question. Evan has wrote a tease. Do you want me to read it? There's some issues here. Do you want me to read
it? I'm not on the page, so I don't know what it is.
Coming up, we go from the bubble to the wubble. Next, Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio. On the TV side, we're heading over to ESPN News.
I'm glad you did it like 10 seconds early, too.
Thank you. Well, I just wanted to let it sink in for a second.
Let it marinate for a little bit.
Thank you, exactly. Just let it sit in for a minute. We're coming back. Stay with us.
Wubble.